in light of everything that's happened in France this week, that sport gets put into a sort of context. But if we can sort of say that also sport can act as a very positive thing, you know, whether it be participatory or whether it can be spectator-based, sport is a very, it can have a positive, almost defiant, cocking a snoop at those who want us to stop living our lives in the way that we live our lives.
Yes.
The Tour de France this year, for whatever reason, sometimes good, sometimes bad, has been an incredible watch.
I know, it's almost bizarre. It's had everything, hasn't it? I mean, I think in my 32-year career of organising bike races and being, you know, I've organised stages of the Tour de France when it's been in the UK since 94 when it visited here, then Ireland, and then in London, central London. I don't think I've ever had, ever experienced the first where you've actually had the yellow jersey attacking downhill, winning stages with several kilometres to go, fighting out sprints, finishes with some of the best sprinters in the world, certainly the green jersey, Peter Sagan. And now running up on the lower slopes of Ventoux after that bizarre situation on stage 12. It's just incredible. And it's the whole drama and this wonderful world of bike racing, which is getting more and more complex, the more and more popular it becomes.
And yet the basics remain the same. I mean, these great stage races produce interesting, fascinating people, competitors-wise, and wonderful stories. I mean, I think Britain has just, you know, in recent years started to realise, I know that the track cycling has obviously become very popular with success at Olympic level, but I think we've really started realising how fascinating, how amazing, how brilliant stage racing, road racing is.
Yeah, that's right. And I think stage racing, I mean, many people have often said to me, not latterly, but in the past, I don't quite understand how a stage race works, but it's very much like a car rally in that you have to cover the stage in the minimum amount of time that you can. It doesn't matter. You could win the Tour de France or any other stage race and not even win a stage because of the very nature of it. But people are beginning to understand that now. And that's in my lifetime and my career, that's incredible because you don't have to explain every time how they have won the actual event. So it's all part of this educational process. And I suppose if you hit somebody and the general public with an event often enough, they will begin to understand it. And the more they get fascinated by it.
Just in regards to, and without, let's not go into detail, but, you know, the events of Stage 12 in particular, you know, and the whole bizarre set of circumstances from an accident which happened to a situation where the race leader, the general classification race leader, is running up a hill, jumping on one bike that's inappropriate, jumping on another bike which is, you know, more appropriate but not perfect in maybe in certain respects. From a logistical point of view, that must be an organiser's nightmare.
It is, you know, and as an obvious organiser myself, my heart does go out to ASO, who own the event and organise it, in that there's it's a very complex situation to organise a professional bike race on ineffectively, although the roads are closed by the police and the authorities, it's still an open road, i.e. that spectators can get onto it prior to the roads closing. And the challenges faced by them on this particular stage, on stage 12, it was Bastille Day. People had probably been up there 2 days. It's 2,000 metres. They are, has obviously been, some of them, by the looks at some of the pictures, had been drinking probably for those 2 days. Then the organisers were faced with having to move the finish because of the high winds, which were extraordinary. I mean, I saw pictures of trailers being blown over.
Yeah.
So they'd got to move 6 kilometres down to Chalet Reynard, I think is where the stage actually finished. Thousands of tons of equipment. And they've got to move, potentially, those 6 kilometres worth of spectators who would be both sides of those. So you've got 12 kilometres, in effect, of spectators. They've got to move those further down the mountain and still put this finish up and maintain safety of both the riders and the spectators. And But for me as an organizer, what I felt was lacking was they've got this in the sport's got this increased problem of its popularity, yeah. More spectators on the road. We saw earlier in the week spectators with flags and dressed up in all sorts of fancy dress and costume, which is fantastic. It adds to the atmosphere. But it gets to such a level that becomes dangerous. Mm. Not only dangerous for the cyclists, danger to themselves as spectators, danger to vehicles moving through this whole melee of spectators that have been that probably inebriated on the particular day. They crowd the road, and then the motorcyclists, of which caused the accident, without it being the motorcyclist's fault,
yeah.
They had nowhere to go other than to hit a spectator and cause potential injury there or harm there. And but for me, it should have been monitored throughout the day. Mm. There should have been, clearly, with 500-600 metres to go, there were no barriers on either side. Now, I know they had problems on the one side because it dropped away into the mountain, and it was too dangerous to put spectators on the one side. But if you looked at earlier on down the mountain, before they were still in the tree line, I think, they had hard barriers on one side and no spectators on the other side. I only saw on those pictures just a couple of police officers or marshals or stewards in locations advising and telling people where to go. That's fine. But then when you got when you came out of that hard barrier on the right-hand side on the climb, there just appeared to be no barriers where the incident was. Mm-hmm. And the crowds had got onto the road. There couldn't have been 2 foot of road space. You've got motorcyclists trying to push the way through it. You'd got gaps occurring between the 13 that were up the road and the Chris Froome, Boca Mollema and Richie Port's group, and then you got a chasing group behind. And it would appear that when the 13, the first lot, got through, the crowds invaded the road because there was no demarcation, no roper posts, and there didn't appear to be any stewards there. I felt that situation should have been monitored throughout the day by ASO, and they should have sent a physical presence down there in the form of rangers or stewards or marshals or police. And they must have known. They must have known. I mean, traditionally, they finished in Ventoux before many, many times. They must know there's an ever-changing weather pattern up there. And surely they should have had a plan B should this be the situation. But without me knowing all the facts, I can just speak from my experience. Yeah. We had a situation with the Tour of Britain 1 year where we had this hurricane coming in on the west coast. We were going from Kendal to Blackpool. It was so strong. I was at the finish line in Blackpool on that particular day. A traffic light snapped and blew across the front of Blackpool. And I was with the chief executive of Blackpool, and I said, I'm sorry, it's too dangerous to finish. And we cancelled, we neutralised the stage. We did not have the stage at all. Now, I'm not saying that they should have done that, but I'm certainly saying they should have monitored throughout the day what the crowd build-up was going to be and identified potential points of danger to both the spectators and the riders. It would also appear that there were no regulators in front of you. Normally have, in a bike race at this level, and certainly on the Tour of Britain, we have a regulator that monitors the motorcycles who have to do an important job. Information bikes, photo bikes, TV camera bikes, police outriders, that monitors the number of bikes in front of groups of riders. There didn't appear to be any regulator there pushing these bikes out the way forward. And I know the first 13 got through, the Thomas de Gendt, who won the stage. That 13 got through, but it seemed then that there was, I know it was only a few minutes, but it would appear then that is when the crowd invaded the road.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, it's a nightmare, but lessons obviously, hopefully, will be learnt as a consequence. On from a more positive note, in regards to the Tour of Britain returning, and as you know, the popularity is increasing. I took my young boy to the finish here in London last year, which he thoroughly enjoyed. We got right next to the finish line, which he thought was fantastic. But the tour itself is coming back, and what we're 2 months away, just under 2 months away from it now. So how close are you to sort of having that final, the finalisation of everything being ready?
Well, we're in the process now. We've contracted all the teams. We're in the process of just finalising the names. I won't tell you who those are because that's another release that's coming out. But we've got, hopefully, we'll have gold medalists returning back from Rio. No names like attack drill, but I'll let you decide who they potentially are going to be. Hopefully, last year's winners. We've got 10 World Tour teams, so the 10 of the teams in the Tour de France will be coming back, will be coming to the event. And we've got the penultimate day, which is a change for us. We've got a split stage in Bristol.
Yeah.
We've got an individual time trial of 17 kilometres. And then in the afternoon, we've got a circuit race in Bristol on the same circuit before they actually come to London. So I think, you know, we've got stage one, Glasgow to Castle Douglas, two, Carlisle to Kendal, three, Congleton to Tatton Park, four, Denby to Bilt Wells, stage five, Aberdare to Bath, six, Sidmouth, our own Vontoux finishing at the top of Haytor in Dartmoor, and then the Bristol time trial and road race, and then the final London circuit. So it's going to be absolutely spectacular. It's 3 hours live on television every day, and the highlights the following day. With 120 riders taking part, six-man teams. It's going to be spectacular.
And as far as the tour is concerned, I mean, the thing is, it's about everything else, isn't it? It's getting a slot in the annual schedule in order to get this tour in, because I'm sure with the increased popularity, with the backdrop that, you know, France benefits and produces some wonderful scenery, as does Italy for the Giro and the Vuelta in Spain. But, you know, Britain has equally amount the amount of sort of scenery that would be obviously grace any television scene. And I'm sure you would say, Mick, that you could put on a longer race in this great set of aisles that we have.
We could, you know, we have to apply year on year to the world governing body, because there's a whole plethora of new events that coming onto the calendar, because cycling isn't more popular, has the popular growth here. It's global growth of cycling, and everybody wants to put on a national tour of cycling in their country. We can't get round our country without having massively long transfers between the end of stages and the start of another stage with 8 days. So we have to regionalise it. And this year we're taking it down, as I've just laid out the course, it down the west side of the country. Some years we go down the middle, other stages to the east side. So there's only a limit as to where and what we can do. We want to maintain this slot on the calendar because it is so important. I know we clash with the Tour of Spain, the Vuelta, but that's a three-week stage race that's actually getting too long for the current teams at the moment. I think they're finding the season, which starts in February, end of January, February, finishes in October, is a long season when you're racing at this intensity and at this level. So the teams are more wanting to go to the shorter stage races like ours.
Yep.
I'd love our race to be 10 or 12 days. I think we could really, really do something with it then. We have fantastic scenery. We certainly, you know, the Scottish Islands, the Welsh Mountains, and up into Cumbria and the Northwest. But it's not only the scenery that makes the race. It's actually the riders themselves. You can have one of the hardest stages could be one that is completely flat.
Yeah.
And, you know, with bad weather, and then you get the winds playing a part in dictating how the race is going to pan out.
And also the glory of this type of racing, and we've seen it, and you will have noticed it, no doubt, with the Tour of Britain, is that this is a great way of people these days talk about value for money and how much things cost, but you actually can go and see, as you say, Olympic medalists, you know, supreme athletes, and you go and see them for nothing.
I know it's a great free show for all the families. Now I know it's one of my lines though, that is, but it's absolutely true. And you know, these guys are so down to earth.
Yeah.
At the start, you can mingle with them, get a cap from them. They'll sign autographs, and then they're back on their bikes when at the start, and they are racing their hearts out, and they can do, spectators can do the same at the finish. You can watch this event on your TV set if you know the route, walk out your front door and watch the race go past, and then go back inside the house and watch it finish.
Yeah.
And these riders are so accessible. But I suppose that's the vulnerability of it as well, when you see the incidents on stage 12 in the Tour, that you can get up close, really close, and touch and speak to these guys.
Yeah, too close.
That's the wonderful thing, I think. It's such an inspirational and aspirational sport for people to get into. And for me, when I was a young teenager, I went to watch, as it was then, the Milk Race, and that inspired me to almost change my lifestyle, if you like. And you can, as I've said it, and you said, you know, you took your young boys to central London and you were right near the finish line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just wonderful.
No, absolutely. It was fantastic. And here in London, you know, the number of circuits, you see them go past, you know, a dozen plus times, can't you? So,
yes.
I mean, that's the, and you know, the accessibility is fantastic. You mentioned, and I don't want to sort of, you know, give you a leading question, but you mentioned about the fact that you'd love to be able to expand it to maybe four more days. Is that a possibility in the future?
It would be. It is a possibility. Obviously, it's funding. It's getting the airtime, the scheduling on ITV, which it's shown on. I think the riders would come. I don't think that would be a problem. Traditionally, the slot we have prepares them for the World Championships, which is traditionally has been a week, 2 weeks later. But this year, it's because the Worlds are in the Middle East. And we've got the Olympic Games. All the calendars have been messed up. So, but it is a possibility. We are looking at it. We also organise the Women's Tour of Britain as well, which is 5 days. We've applied to the World Governing Body to extend that to seven, because the popularity of that warrants extending the race for another 2 days. Going back to the Tour of Britain, whether we would get the addition would warrant us obtaining the sponsorship to cover the additional days that we want. I know the sport wants it. I know the sport in the UK support it. I mean, the crowds we get are phenomenal. I think we had 180,000 spectators around the course in central London. And that was, that's 6-7 kilometres. That's all that is.
Yeah. No, fantastic. And I know you can't tell us who's going to... I would love to see Chris Froome on the Roads of Britain.
I would love to see Chris Froome as well.
We'll leave it like that, shall we?
Let's leave it like that.
Brilliant. Yeah. But I would,
because
I think...
Let me leave it like this. It's a possibility.
That's very, very tantalising. And I'd love to see it, because I think, you know, Froome needs to be... I think people need to understand and appreciate actually how good... and how amazing he's been, and I think actually being on the Tour of Britain would be fantastic. Mick,
it is, you know, and I think for his profile in the UK, I think he needs to be here in these events, in our events in the UK, and people would then see what a superb athlete he is.